It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome, everyone, to the 26th episode of Wayne's Comics. I have to apologize for a little delay. Hurricane Irene managed to knock my power out, and that delayed me getting the interviews and everything put together. But I think you're going to really enjoy Phil Hester's interview about Bionic Man and Wonder Woman. Just a little bit of warning, though. It is slightly dated, but I think you'll really enjoy what he has to say about the book, which is sold out, by the way, and a second printing's on the way. This is definitely a book worth picking up, and Mr. Hester does good quality stuff wherever he goes. I'm also going to talk with Gianluca Glazer and Ian Cullen about the most recent comics, about news and previews, and then I'll talk a little bit about the first two books out from DC's New 52. We won't get to the comic store this week, unfortunately, but we will get there in the upcoming weeks. Since we've got so much on our plate, let's get to it.
Astronaut. A man barely alive.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Steve Austin will be that man. Better than he was before. Better.
Okay, today I'm talking with Phil Hester again, and it's good to talk with you again, Phil. How are you doing today?
Great, Wayne. How are you?
Good, good. Oh, there's a lot to talk about with you, so we'll get started. This week, of course, we just got the final Wonder Woman, number 614 came out, and I really liked the book. I'm kind of glad that you wrapped it up as it did, sort of with an action ending that I really liked.
Yeah, it's tough to take the long view on that book because we had sort of a last-minute extension of my run. It was originally supposed to end at 6/12, but DC thought, you know, to make it dovetail into Flashpoint and then the relaunch, mm-hmm. that I should extend it 2 issues. And that was sort of like a welcome thing to me because then I can extend the action of the last sequence and mm-hmm. also have the sort of epilogue that I really wanted And that's the part that I'm really proud of and happy with.
Yeah, I really like it because it wraps up everything that we've seen so far on Wonder Woman, and I really like that. Did you write that part at the end where basically she realizes another change is coming?
Yeah,
I was kind of – I like that because that's
– and we made sure to run it by DC and make sure that was okay, and mm-hmm. Everything was cool, and – it was just sort of a nice little nod to the people that stuck with us for the whole thing about, you know, a nice little meta moment.
Yeah.
What it's like to follow a character that's existed for, you know, 70 years.
Yeah, because I liked it real well because it does do that. It's kind of, she realizes that things are coming just as much as she realized what's happened to her recently. And I think that's kind of cool. It's good for the character. I think Wonder Woman is still struggling to find her own footing in the current continuities, I think. And that was kind of nice for her to be able to kind of stand above everything and see what was happening.
Yeah, it was a nice little nod, I think. You know, it's not, no earth-shaking continuity moment or anything. It's just a nice acknowledgement that because of what she went through in Odyssey, she's more sensitive to mm-hmm. larger changes coming.
Yeah, I like that. Now, I guess before I spoke with you, we couldn't talk about DC at that point. Everything was under wraps. But I guess now most things are pretty much out in the open. So what's your take on what's going on with DC and the new 52 and all?
I think it's really exciting. I mean, I'm not involved with it in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think anything that is an attempt to bring new readers in is positive. As far as old readers go, which I consider myself one,
mm-hmm.
the stories I love, the stories I care about, are still there. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not negated by any sort of new tweaks to continuity or new takes on characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, John Byrne's Man of Steel didn't make Kurt Swan's Superman disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way, Grant Morrison's Dean's wearing Superman is not going to make anybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
See, just I don't quite get I guess I do in some ways, but I don't in other ways. The notion that, you know, all this stuff that we've been doing and we've been buying and reading for so long now is suddenly out the window. I understand people who are collectors wanting to get Action number 900 or Detective number 900, but
and between you and me, I bet they do.
I just, you know, to me, the one thing, if you've ever read comics over any amount of time, is you experience change. You have crisis.
Oh,
you
yeah.
had all these things have happened, and this is just another change. And, you know, we need the new readers. I think you're right on that, is that we're desperate to get people. And the news just came out that Justice League has come in with 200,000 orders. That's, you know, that's a good thing. We haven't seen, you know, many of the numbers like that recently.
I like that. And especially in this age of file sharing and digital downloads, to sell 200,000 copies of any magazine in any way is a positive.
Mm-hmm.
To go back to your last point, change is pretty much the only constant in being a comic book fan. I have a fun thing I do every time I go to the comic shop. I have a great comic shop. My local shop is Daydreams in Iowa City.
Mm-hmm.
And they're one of the few shops that still has back issues out on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So I always go through and just cruise back issues of books that I didn't necessarily get when I was a kid, but were coming out when I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
just to see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up a Fantastic Four that I didn't get when I was 10. Came out when I was 10. And, you know, the Thing is wearing an exoskeleton. He's wearing an Iron Man suit that looks like the Thing outfit because he's Ben Grimm on the inside.
Right.
The Human Torch has quit the team.
Mm-hmm.
Reed and Sue are trying to recruit Power Man to join the team.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that, you know, like, oh, blasphemy, that's not the status quo, but actually it is a status quo. Change is always the status quo in comics.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, expectations have changed a lot in the sense that, you know, it used to be television shows started someplace and they ended at the same place. They went here or there, but by the time the hour was over, we were back where we started. And comics, I think, follow that same pattern, that there was a status quo when it got varied a little bit, therefore just not too far away. And then by the end of the issue, we were back. And I think there's still some mentality that says that we like that. But that's not the way television and comics are today. I mean, there's change constantly going on.
Yeah, you're right. And I think, if you take a longer view of it, things do sort of come back around.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at it episodically, yes, the changes are more of a progression than treading water.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in the end, as I said, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Steve Rogers will be Captain America again.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's right.
And he is. Superman will have his red underwear on again. Believe me.
Yeah, everything's cyclical. I hate to say it, but that's kind of the way real life is. So I guess we can't expect that too much. Well, what's your opinion about digital comics and things like that? You were talking about downloads and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's sort of the lay of the land. I there's a generation of kids, for better or ill, that feel like they don't have to pay for things. And if it's right there online, why not take and read it? And I know the arguments that anything that expands readership will lead to better sales eventually.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really any evidence of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, as an artist, I want more people to see my work. So I'm not that hung up on it. You know, I know that's just the way it is. I wish it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
What comics needs to do is find an iTunes platform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to find that price point that makes buying something easier than stealing it.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of what iTunes did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, iTunes, you know, it's like, 99 cents. I might as well just buy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not feel even a little bit icky about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think comics need to do that, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I do, and I don't know whether others like me do it, if I'm behind on something and suddenly I discover a book that I really like, but I can't find the back issues, you know, I go and buy them through iTunes and read the digitals until I get caught up, and then I go and go back to the regular paper copies.
Yeah, I think that's the model. I think that's what we will wind up with eventually. I think everything will be online, and then stuff that's particularly noteworthy or long runs of books will be collected in books, and books will be art objects again.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. I hate to lose the experience of reading a comic in my hands.
Yeah, me too. You know, maybe we're old fogies, but I don't want to lose that.
Well, it's a great experience. You just sort of, Frank Miller once said that he opened up a Batman comic and he fell in, and I've loved that description.
Yeah, and it becomes an entity. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a thing. It's an object in your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a file stored anywhere.
Right.
It's something you have physical custody of. And
right, right.
Feel in some way responsible for it, and you're invested in it that way.
Right.
Getting kind of existential on it, but you can have a relationship with a book that you can't have with a Kindle.
That's right. Well, why don't we go ahead and talk about the Bionic Man? We talked a little bit last time that you and I got to talk about this, and you were right. Jamie shows up in the first issue, which was great to see. I was happy to see that. I do have to say, though, you guys have, 8-10 covers for this good thing?
Yeah, that's above my pay grade. I don't make that call.
Okay.
But yeah, it seems to work. It makes the book sell, and mm-hmm. you know, it gets some retailers excited about ordering the book. And whatever we can do to, and this comic market is so crowded mm-hmm. that to make, you know, I don't begrudge anybody any strategy to make noise.
Mm-hmm.
The book ordered.
Well, the good news is it came out just before the new 52 started. So
we were worried about when that happened. I was like, oh, please tell me we're not coming out in September. And we just barely made it. We just barely eked it out. But the numbers are really good, and mm-hmm. we sold out. And
great.
There's another printing already on the way.
Great, great. Well, that's good. The only sad thing is that you didn't get to draw one of the covers.
Well, I'm still drawing Green Hornet covers, actually. I don't write that book anymore, but I still draw covers for that book.
So oh, good. Well, I just thought it would be nice to have you, since you're an artist as well as a writer, to have that on the front of the Bionic Man. But
I won't say that will never happen. It may happen at some point.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing I like about the book is that it fills in some of the gaps that we didn't know before about Steve Austin.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the strength of Kevin as a storyteller, is that he identifies strongly with his characters and he sort of lives their life.
Mm-hmm.
It does a good job of making them seem like real people.
Mm-hmm.
In just a few pages, there's no question at all that Steve and Jamie are in love with each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sold, and that they are not just in love with each other, but committed to each other, which I think to do it in the space of, I don't know, 5 or 6 pages like Kevin did is mm-hmm. really remarkable. And that's his gift.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to do the same thing with Oscar Goldman. He's going to do the same thing with all the people in OSI. He's going to handle all of that mm-hmm. in a way that sort of sells them as real people, which I think is the benefit of this sort of long format comic book story.
Mm-hmm. As far as the converting the script into comic book format, you two work together. We talked a little bit about this last time, but I'm still kind of interested. Right. He wrote the original script or the screenplay, and then you're adapting it into comic?
Right. He wrote a screenplay. I went through the screenplay, and Kevin and I sort of kicked it back and forth until we broke it down into 10 issues
mm-hmm.
of worth of comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my job to make each of those chapters fit into a 22-page comic book format.
Ah.
And I reformat that script. I've changed very little dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I try to preserve as much of Kevin's dialogue as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to write stage directions in there.
Mm-hmm.
So Jonathan Lau knows what to draw.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's almost like adapting a novel to a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to take that screenplay and actually put in all the camera moves and the set and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I still enjoy it. It's still rewarding, but it's more a technical aspect than a creative one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess as long as they're willing to pay for it, it's not a bad way to make a living, I guess.
Yeah, and it's fun. And, you know, I do get to inject a few things here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have to adapt it, mostly because Kevin wrote it so long ago that technology has changed quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the plane. I thought the plane was kind of cool. That it's a lot bigger and stronger than the one that he flew back in the 70s, I think it was, when the $6 million
man. Yeah, we update a lot of things. Yeah. So, I mean, $6 million gets you like a hearing aid now. So I think in issue 3 you'll understand where the nickname $6 million man comes up. But we found a way to shoehorn it in and make it kind of a
cool
thing.
Well, I like the way that the comic ends, and I don't think it gives away too much to say that some of the stuff that he says is what we used to get in the title sequence
oh, yeah.
from the show.
We made sure to hit those nostalgia notes.
Yeah. See, that's one of the great things about the book is you really feel for Steve Austin when the stuff starts to happen. It's sort of like a, you know, like an auto accident. You can watch it on YouTube, and every time you see it, you feel sort of badly for the people involved. And that's with him. I mean, you know, he's got basically the perfect life, and he's going to get that ripped away from him, and we know that.
As I said earlier, that's what this format allows us to do. We don't have any budget. We don't have an allotted running time.
Mm-hmm.
So we can afford to get into the backstories of these characters. Once we've established them,
mm-hmm.
we don't have a budget, we can make really spectacular things happen. So mm-hmm. I think these first like three issues, you're going to see a lot of the character development that, I don't want to say was missing in the show, but the show had to get to action pretty quickly and, you know, have Steve off on missions and capers. And we really want to deal with, so what was Steve Austin going through between the crash and giving his consent to become Cyborg?
Mm-hmm.
And the actual process of becoming a cyborg. There's a lot of drama and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And how does Oscar Goldman feel as his friend, authorizing his best friend to become something the world's never seen before, which is mm-hmm. Cyborg?
There's a character at the very beginning of the book who's apparently bionic, and I guess we're going to get to see him. I have a feeling he's going to be ending up challenging Steve down the pike.
It's no secret that, I mean, anybody that's familiar with comics or fiction in general will be able to realize that's the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got some sort of relationship to bionics in general and maybe to OSI. So we're going to see a lot more of that guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. I'm just curious to find out if he's going to have had something to do with the plane crash that's going to be involved.
I cannot reveal that.
Yeah, I think I better not ask that. I don't know if I want to know the answer at this point.
I can't reveal that sort of thing. Well, heck, I can. No, he doesn't.
Oh, he doesn't? Oh.
It's a genuine accident.
Okay.
But he will definitely have a lot to do with Steve Austin in the upcoming issues.
Oh, good. Well, that's good. See, I like that about the book. It really is, you know, nothing against the actor who played Steve Austin, but he was sort of cold in the way that he portrayed him as a military person. And so I kind of never really, this was the thing with the Bionic Woman. She was much more accessible to people where Steve Austin was not.
Yeah, I preferred that when I was a kid.
No, so did I. I loved the Bionic Woman. I would watch Steve Austin going, well, okay. He was very mechanical about how he went through things. But I guess, you know, military people do that kind of thing. But this actually fleshes out his character a lot more so that I really like Steve Austin a lot more than I ever did during the show.
Yeah, that was our goal. And I think that's Kevin's strength. He can make what might seem to be two-dimensional characters into fully, you know, realized human beings. And that's definitely the case with these first three issues of the book as he's becoming Cyborg.
Mm-hmm.
You feel his pain, and you feel his anguish, and you also feel his joy when he actually, you know, gets into his new body. So, yeah, Kevin's really gifted at that sort of thing.
Great. It's just, basically, there's not a 1 of 12 or 1 of 6 on this, so this is planned to be an ongoing book?
Yeah, it's an ongoing book. The first 10, unless something changes, the first 10 will cover Kevin's screenplay. And then after that, if Kevin wants to continue with more notes, continue working with me, we'll continue working that way.
Mm-hmm.
Or if Kevin doesn't have anything else to say, I'll probably stay on and
mm-hmm.
continue the book from there.
Okay. Well, that's good. It's good to know what else you're working on. Are there other projects you're working on that you'd like us to know about?
Oh, gosh. I'm always working on...
Yeah.
it's hard to remember it all.
Uh-huh.
I'm still working on The Darkness. I'm writing my last story arc of The Darkness right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun and epic and momentous. I'm also doing a one-shot for this year's Top Cow pilot season, which is a promotion they do where they unleash a series of one-shots, all different concepts, and then people are allowed to vote on which one they feel deserves to be a regular series.
Mm.
And the one I'm working on is called Seraph, and it was created by Chicago Bears linebacker Lance Briggs.
Mm.
And I'm working with him to take his ideas and transform him into this fully realized comic. I just wrapped it up, and I feel really good about it. And Lance is a good guy, and it's been fun to get to know him,
because
I am actually a football fan.
Mm.
And what else am I working on? Well, I can't talk about that.
This is the hard part.
I have two things I can't talk about.
Okay.
Oh, I just finished drawing a story for the upcoming film Immortals. Have you heard about that?
Mm-hmm.
Seen anything about that?
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a companion graphic novel that comes out around the same time.
Cool.
And I just drew a short story that Jeff Parker wrote for that.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I have a couple things coming down the pike that I really can't talk about, and I feel stupid saying that, because who cares? Mm-hmm. It's comics. It's not national security, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, it's better not to get in trouble. But you've had some older stories come out in great formats, like The Coffin came out and Deeper. Are there other ones like that coming out?
No, those two were sort of special cases, and they came out in hardcover formats that I'm really proud of. They look great.
Oh, they're great. I love them.
Huddleston, and one of the secret projects I can't really talk about yet is that I can't talk about where it's coming from anyway.
Okay.
But Huddleston and I are working on a third collaboration.
Great.
He's Mike Huddleston, the artist that drew both a coffin and Deep Sleeper.
Mm-hmm.
He draws Butcher Baker for Image right now. Mm-hmm. And we'll be doing another, hopefully as good collaboration as those last two.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be doing another graphic novel together.
Mm-hmm. Well, what we'll do is we'll keep an eye out for Phil Hester. When we see that name, we'll buy it, is what we'll have to do.
That's what I want to hear, Wayne.
It's a rare combination when someone can both draw and write. And so I think that makes your writing stronger because you know what you want to see on the page when the time comes.
Well, thank you so much. I will tease this much. In the next year, you will see me writing and drawing the same book.
Oh, great. That'll be good. I look forward to it.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts, Wayne. I mean, it's, you know, all you can do as a creative person is just hustle and try to get your vision out there, and if people enjoy it.
Yeah, well, it's good stuff, because I like The Bionic Man a lot, and I'm looking forward to other things. Well, I do have to ask one question. We'll see Jamie again somewhere down the road?
Oh, definitely.
Okay, good.
I'm not letting anything out of the bag here.
Mm-hmm.
I think anyone familiar with the Green Hornet and how Dynamite handled the Green Hornet is aware that at certain points we really oversaturated the comic book market with Green Hornet products.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Nick Barucci realizes that, and he does not want to do that same thing with Bionic Man. He doesn't want to dilute the brand.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to be seeing a ton of Bionic Man spinoffs. You're going to. It's no surprise. We're really working hard on a Bionic Woman book. I don't know when it's going to happen or if it's going to be approved or whatever, but they're taking all the steps to make sure it's a good book and that it comes out in a timely fashion, doesn't detract from the Bionic Man book, and can stand on its own two legs. So it could be a year from now, it could be a year and a half from now. I don't know. It could be 6 months from now.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to rush into it. They're going to make sure it's its own entity, that it'll be a good book. And I know the people behind it, and I have full confidence that it's going to be a great book.
But it doesn't involve you, though, it sounds like.
Not directly, but, we have to work in concert with two characters. They have a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Whether that relationship continues or not, we have to coordinate all that.
Great. I'm looking forward to all that because it reminds me of the day when all the kids were used to run in slow motion. kind of stuff, and it's great things about it. So I'm really enjoying it, Phil. It's good to talk with you again, and hopefully we get to talk with you again sometime in the near future.
Great. Anytime, Wayne.
Okay, thanks.
All right, buddy.
Radioactive robot lizard,
but with horn-rimmed glasses and a pocket protector.
That's nerdy. We're on the rampage, laying waste to the geek landscape.
We'll talk movies, TV, comics, toys, video games.
And sometimes we talk turkey.
Don't you mean chicken?
That's right. So check us out at Megapodzilla.com.
We're also available on iTunes and the Zune Marketplace.
Aw, yeah.
Time for this week's news and previews with Ian Collin. How are you, Ian?
I'm good. I'm sorry, I just recovered from reading The Vault. The adrenaline's still going.
Oh, good. Well, then you're feeling good. And nice. Gianluca Glaser. How are you, Gianluca?
I'm doing very good.
Good. Before we get started on the regular stuff, I got a couple of things I want to run past you guys, and I intentionally did not prep you guys so that I could get your response. This week is the beginning of the New 52. The Flashpoint actually ends the previous universe, and New 52, the Justice League number one, has come out to do it, and it's gone over with a lot of hype. There's a couple of things that people have been raising, and a couple of questions that I thought I wanted to ask you guys and see what you thought about this. Number one, I thought that I heard some people talking about the fact that Marvel missed an opportunity here, that here's a week when DC only has two comics coming out. Now, granted, they sold very well. We're going to talk a little bit about that shortly. You have some news on that, Gianluca. But why do you think it was that Marvel didn't, you know, try to leap in and kind of take away some of the limelight from DC? I mean, Gianluca, do you have any idea on that?
First of all, these kind of things just don't happen overnight. You have to plan these things months in advance. And obviously, you know, the news on DC doing the relaunch in September did leak earlier before the official previews promoting these titles did. But, you know, I guess at the same time, you know, I mean, is Marvel at reaction of the news going to have to, like, you know, drop everything? Because by the time the news comes out, everyone kind of already has their plans for September. So, I mean, it would require probably like a huge rush job on Marvel's part to kind of do something and, you know, possibly fail in doing that. I mean, September is going to be DC's month regardless. Mm-hmm. You know, they can just hope that October, November, December, you know, they have something of their own kind of event they can do to kind of like bring people to their side.
Because, you know, what they could have done, I mean, they could have taken the millions of X-books that have been out, they could have, like, quickly thrown together a couple of trade paperbacks or something of the best X-Men storylines and say that they put those on the stands, you know, and the Marvel Zombies could come in and say, oh, Marvel must have Marvel. So, in a way, I think Marvel kind of dropped the ball on this one from their perspective. What do you think, Ian?
The House of Ideas.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Okay, because I think that I think Marvel really missed a big opportunity. I mean, they've let DC have the limelight. Now, granted, there has been a ton of press on this, and the fact of the matter is that, you know, this was they're usually very crafty when it comes to marketing and things like that. But this is a case where I think they were caught with, you know, their pants down. They really did not know how to react, and they just did their regular stuff. One person put the idea out that the reason why they didn't do this stuff was to make the Marvel people feel like this was just another regular week of comics. But the truth of the matter is that anybody who saw the new people coming in the doors, and the word is a lot of Marvel people actually picked up Justice League number one as well. So I think that Marvel, they really kind of missed the boat on this one, from my perspective anyway.
Well, you know, weren't they kind of too busy trying to mess up Flashpoint with their you know, very, very rare variant comic, which was sort of like basically one of their nothing characters?
Yeah, well, you know, Marvel.
They started their own panel making a joke about DC's event.
I sat there and saw that lovely thing. Another thing I think is that they underestimated how much this was going to be. I think they looked at it and said, yeah, it's just, as you point out, John, like one of their panels said, nah, it's nothing to worry about. We've seen this stuff before. But I really do think this is an unusual time for DC. And I really quickly, I'll explain why, and we'll get into the news and the previews. I think that you've got the talent in the right place at the right time. You've got Geoff Johns and Jim Lee, who are admittedly some of the most talented people in comics today. You've got them in the right place. You've got DC's basically positioned. They've been getting better at Green Lantern. Batman sales are up. This is their chance to try to really move up and at least give Marvel competition. And I think DC did this because of that. You know, what do you want to do? Wait till Geoff Johns or Jim Lee go other places and then try to boost things up? That hasn't worked in the past. So I think that's what's going on with DC. I think they realized they're in a position now to actually try to challenge Marvel. And, you know, based on what I saw, I'm hopeful. Okay, why don't we go ahead and get into the news and the previews. And, John, look, you had some stuff to say about some of the DC comics.
I wanted to mention that Justice League number one has already sold out. And interesting enough here, this is kind of an interesting marketing ploy here. So the retailers, you know, when a book sells out, it goes on backlist. And then based on the amount of backlist orders, you know, a publisher kind of knows whether or not to do a second printing. And then when they do announce a second printing, there's a certain time window retailers have to, like, place their orders, you know, for the second printing books. Well, interesting enough with Justice League, you know, I guess because they're DC, there's a bit more leeway in terms of time and stuff. But the orders for the second printing, at one point or another, there was a cutoff. Mm-hmm. So the people who, you know, retailers who later on placed their orders for second printings, those orders went on backlist. So what those are is those are backlist orders for a third printing that they're going to have coming out for Justice League.
Oh, that's really something.
So very interesting there. Very much a marketing ploy. I'm sure they decided beforehand, oh, we're going to do a second printing of 10%, you know, of what we have. So 20,000. So I'm sure there was purposely a limit of 20,000. Once they maybe got – and I'm just saying this is an arbitrary number. You know, but once, like, say that X number got reached, then they decide they're going to do a third printing off of that. Because a lot of books go into second printing, but third printing really gets you a lot of news and attention. And third printing for a book that came out – you know, this news was announced like 2 days after the release of, you know, the book.
Mm-hmm. See, that's amazing.
So it's pretty amazing.
That stuns me. And you know, you're right. It's marketing in the sense that the news people will say, oh my gosh, third printing, you know, kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's rare for things to go into third printings.
Because the people who probably picked up issue one already, a lot of them are going to want to buy the second printing of issue one because they already know the second printing of issue one is going to be sold out and there's going to be a third printing. You know, so there's those collectors at heart that are going to want that.
See, that's the irony. And then, we're getting into the digital era, and, you know, people are, you know, you can't save first editions of digital files unless there's some dramatic change to the pages in there.
Right.
But as far as, I mean, this is clearly an appeal to the paper collectors, because paper collectors are because they're going
to
want to have all these copies because, you know, you bought, you said off the air that you got yours and it went straight into a bag and board, you know, which is
it did.
And
I didn't even have to wait for the news. I knew it was going to happen anyway, you know?
Yeah. See, that's fascinating.
It is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're taking it one step further. They have, you know, titles coming out, you know, in the next few weeks. They announced, like, Batman and Robin, I think even Batgirl. These titles are already sold out.
So which do you know which ones altogether? Which ones to have?
I'd have to look. It's a handful of titles. I know Batman and Robin was definitely one of them. I think probably some of the Batmans were as well, you know, because retailers kind of see what you're seeing, that it's kind of like become a big deal, you know, and there's a big rush of people. And so they're going to, you know, want extra books on hand. They were conservative before, mm-hmm. but now they're, you know, wanting to get in these last minute orders.
Yeah. I'm just hoping that, that they get my Detective Comics in the box on the day
right.
it comes out, you know, because I've got, you know, some of the titles that I have an order actually coming out this week to come out on the 7th. I think I think one of them is I'm not sure if Action comes out on the 7th, Action number 1.
I think it does.
So, you know, in knowing that these titles are going to be sold out, you know, prior to the release, you know, don't be surprised if you see people camped out early in the morning wanting to get to the store. Get their copy because they know that once the day that it's on sale, because they know that that book's going to sell out because there's more demand than there are copies, you know, and that also is also going to go to a second printing.
See, the interesting thing is with digital digital printing, I thought was going to solve all this stuff, that people wouldn't do that. But the interesting thing is that people still, at this point, are interested in paper copies and collecting them. So
it's, maybe not the majority of people are as collectors, you know, are into having to have that first edition, having each edition, you know, of each mm-hmm. printing. But there is a market out there, you know. And, you know, you can look at the Bionic Man issue 1 or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles issue 1, and you can see, like, you know, 12 covers, mm-hmm. you know, for a single comic.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
Well, I've got a bit of a digital comic book news from here in England, if you guys are interested.
Sure.
All right.
Basically, a press release passed through our midst this week. From our friend John Dreeman, who does some of the British comics news.
Mm-hmm.
He's also involved in this project as well. And basically, Rock Comics, which is a digital comics distributor here in the UK, it's one of the first ones here in the UK, it's been going for a few years, They've just released their first original title, which is called Misfits from Mobile. And basically, it's first originated comics title. And Misfits from Mobile is drawn by Andrew Chu, I think, and is the first fully originated rock comics title and will initially be published as a weekly webcomic, which you can see over at www.misfitsfrommobile.com. And it will be followed by rollout on iPad and other devices. It's an ongoing adventure comic which centres on the story of teenagers recruited into a secret organisation to battle crime, terrorism and other dangers, some stranger than others. And if you're wondering why a secret organisation would risk such young lives, there's a very good reason, and all will be revealed in the coming weeks.
So this is so you get one comic. I'm just trying to understand how you get it. This is not. Is this a weekly comic or is it once a month or how does this come out?
I think it's a weekly thing and you download it off the internet.
Okay, so you can subscribe.
Subscribe online, and it'll go on iPads and stuff like that. Rock Comics, they also have an app. They have an app for cell phones. So I'm not sure if that's still going or not. But this book, it's actually the creator of the founder of Rock Comics, Jonathan Kendrick. The strip's actually written by John Freeman from Storylines by Jonathan Kendrick, with art by Andrew Chu, Chris Carter. And Chris Carter is colouring the title, with Jim Campbell providing lettering and logos. That sounds like an interesting little comic, but titles, when I first read it, I thought, they're not doing a comic book on Misfits, as in the TV show, right. But it's obviously not that. Mm-hmm. But that's what caught my eye about it.
Cool.
I thought I was mentioning.
Well, we ought to support that, because Mr. Freeman does help out with the scifipulse.net website occasionally, and it'd be good to help him out, too, once in a while. Any other news that you had, Gianluca?
Yeah, big one, WonderCon for 2012 is going to be in Anaheim as opposed to San Francisco. The Marconi Center is going through renovation, so unfortunately they weren't able to book WonderCon at its usual venue. So, you know, in March, I believe, like the 16th, it's going to be down in Anaheim instead, which is kind of a shame. I mean, it's closer for me. I live in Los Angeles. So it's just like a 50-minute drive, but, you know, as opposed to 8 hours. But San Francisco is just a wonderful city, you know, and it's just a great atmosphere for WonderCon. And, you know, I don't know if it's going to be the same.
Interesting. Well, it's a con we all wonder about, so we'll find out more about that. Any other stuff?
I'll definitely be there.
Okay.
The new previews came out.
Yes.
For September.
Yes, the telephone book.
Great new time. Yes, some great new titles in the previews. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Boom Studios has like a new Peanuts comic book coming out. Mm-hmm. They're doing an introductory $1 issue. Mm-hmm. Flash Gordon, Dynamite has the Flash Gordon license, so they're launching with Flash Gordon Zeitgeist.
Sorry.
So it's interesting. These are titles coming out in November. Mm-hmm. So November is a five-week month. Mm-hmm. And because of that, IDW is doing a five-issue weekly comic called Jack Avarice is the Courier, with art and writing by Chris Madden. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting experiment for them. You know, doing a five-issue weekly comic for the month. I'm kind of curious to see how well that book does.
Very quickly, John Luca, I'd like to backtrack a little bit to the Flash Gordon thing. The reason I was booing you is because Arden Entertainment have the official license to Flash Gordon, and now Dynamite have it, so it's kind of like now shared between the two companies. And by the looks of things, they're both doing completely different things with it. I mean, Arden have actually kind of updated Flash Gordon a little bit. You know, they turn Dale Arden into a secret agent of sorts. She's a spy with the CIA. Now, from the cover art that I've seen, that Dynamite have done, it looks like Dynamite are actually going with the original pulp vibe of Flash Gordon. So they're gonna go for the 1930s style Flash Gordon, but And that's the reason I'm thinking, because it's kind of like it's going to be really strange having two different Flash Gordon comics out there.
Yeah. There's some people who are going to really like that original vibe, but it doesn't appeal to me. I think what Arden doing is much more appealing.
Well, I'm gonna get it anyway. I'm thinking I'm gonna order the Dynamite one. Just see where it goes, because I'm curious. Right. I've got the original. I've got a few of the original Alex Raymond strips via Checker Publishing. So I'm just a big fan of Flash Gordon all around, really, with the exception of that horrible Sci-Fi Channel thing.
It always must be mentioned with Flash Gordon, the horrible Sci-Fi thing. So anyway, John Luca, you got other stuff? There's any more news?
Yeah, well, for Dynamite, they have that, Flash Gordon. They also, which will have, because it's through Dynamite, will have an Alex Ross cover. Mm-hmm. Kirby Genesis, they're doing Silver Star, which was one of Jack Kirby's last creations. So it's a spinoff of the Kirby Genesis comic book that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And Dynamite also has like a best of Alex Ross's cover work, for Dynamite. They're doing a collection of that.
Yeah.
For Avatar Press, they have a comic book called Stitch. It's based off of a short film by Garth Ennis. Garth Ennis, I think, wrote and direct. Interesting thing, John Luca is working with Warren Ellis on Wolfskin. Yeah, well, it's John Luca Pagliarani.
Oh, wow. That's such a common name. I mean,
Yes. So it's kind of cool. I get to see my name next to Warren Ellis, but it's not me. Guys.
My next door neighbor's dog's called John Luca. It's really funny. He goes outside and shouts, John Luca!
Boom has some interesting things going on. I wanted to mention really quick, guys. So they're doing the introductory Peanuts. So they're going to be doing like a regular Peanuts comic book. Mm-hmm. They solicited Starborn number 12. And it's going to be like the last one. Stan Lee's it mentioned here. It's the final issue. So this is the very last of the Stan Lee books, the very last issue of the last Stan Lee book. So it appears that they ran it for a year and have put an end to them.
I've got a question on the Peanuts thing.
Sure.
It fascinates me that they're doing Peanuts in a comic book rather than going to the newspaper and do a strip. Did they give a reason why they wanted to do a comic rather than go to the newspaper?
Well, the publishing rights for printing the newspaper probably belong to the Schultz estate family. Is that what you're inquiring? You're inquiring why Boom didn't print them?
No. I'm just wondering why the people who are behind it. You're right. It may be that the family owns – and if they go to a newspaper, they have to pay the family as opposed to a comic, which is – I wonder if Mr. Schultz ever conceived of doing that, because I never saw a Peanuts comic before. So this is kind of interesting. Maybe that's their way to kind of make more money in a way that moves the property forward.
Yeah, they're going to basically, there hadn't been any new Peanuts created since Charles Schulz's death, and this is going to be like all new stuff. So
interesting.
It's going to be very interesting indeed. But you're going to have the family involved in that, so it's not going to go in any crazy directions.
Okay.
Yeah, I still never read a Peanuts. I think I'll just watch the cartoon when they make a movie out of it. When Pixar do a Charlie Brown movie.
Now, see, you don't like Star Trek when they make a comic. You want to see it on the screen. But here's Charlie Brown and Peanuts and stuff has always been in print. And, of course, granted, they've had specials that have done very well.
I've seen it on the screen.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've seen Charlie Brown.
All right. So I mentioned before, so the Stan Lee books have ended. And in its place, Boom has two new series. One of them is called Seven Warriors. It's all the warriors are hot women, and I guess it's kind of in the vein of 300. So it's going to be an action adventure. Another story that they have out is called Operation Iron Cross. So another interesting thing, World War II action, basically a German intelligence officer is tortured by his superiors because he's turned against them. And I guess he is some type of decoy or something. He's going to end up, there's end up going to be this guy kicking a lot of German people's butts. So,
okay. Well, we always like to read that.
Kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Boom also has like a couple of spinoffs for Hellraiser. They have Hellraiser Masterpieces 1 and 2. Now, what it is I guess they released like a big trade book of like the previously published by Marvel stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I guess they're doing this, continuing to release the stuff, but in single 32-page, $3.99 issues.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem fair somehow that Marvel gets the Muppets and all the Disney stuff, right, and the Boom gets Hellraiser in return. It doesn't seem quite like a fair trade.
Well, they get the license they did with Hellraiser is a separate deal. Oh. And I guess because of that, what's his name? Clive Barker, I guess, owns the rights to the previously published Marvel stuff.
Oh. You
know, so that they have access to that kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Disney, it's the same way, too. Anybody who publishes anything for Disney goes into a bank that whoever is the current license holder is allowed to publish. Mm-hmm. But the difference is that, you know, the Marvel stuff that's been republished is stuff from the 90s,
right,
you know, maybe even earlier. The stuff, you know, from the Disney, the main stuff they're using, you know, is stuff from 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, is that all the news that we've got?
There's a spinoff for Betrayal for Planet of the Apes Boom's doing called Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes. Mm. And then they also have an interesting thing here, a political-based thing called Decision 2012,
yeah,
where retailers can order individual issues of each of the candidates that are going to be running for president the next year.
How do you think that's going to do?
That's an interesting question because there are currently – let's see, 4, 6, and then there's like currently 10 books that retailers can pick from, you know, from Obama, Mitt Romney, Herman Cain, you know. Mm-hmm. The Newt Gingrich probably isn't going to do well, I can imagine. Sarah Palin will probably do well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but yeah, some of these it's an interesting experiment, just in the same way IDW is doing an interesting experiment with a five-issue weekly comic miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to say. I mean, obviously, one book will do well, you know, in printing, but you have to print 10 of these different interiors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be costly if you only have like 200 orders for, you know, Newt Gingrich.
Mm-hmm. Well, it interests me because in the sense they might be smarter to say, here's everybody, and put one book out and say, here are all the people that are running for president, rather than, you know, because you're forcing the comic book store to make a decision, you know, based on,
sure,
on the individual political choices of its of the buyers. And that's I don't know how they're going to decide that.
Yeah, it's tough. And who knows if people – is there a market for these? I know Blue Water makes a lot of money off of the biographies. But there are people who are just after they've been elected, you know, stuff like that. Or you get down to, you know, the presidential primaries where you have the two people against each other. And then IDW, you know, or somebody will do like a flip book, you know, each person on each side.
I don't know. I'm not convinced this is a good idea. But, you know, I guess they have to replace Stan Lee with something, I guess.
Well, it's an experiment. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how these books do. Obviously, two of them are going to do well over time, you know,
mm-hmm,
as the election draws closer.
Mm-hmm.
And then eight of them are, you know, obviously going to maybe be collector's items or just fall by the wayside.
Yeah, that would be a way to do it. You know, it's like, you know, buy this cover. This cover was a misprint. Buy this book because there's rare or very few like that. And it's just, well, you know, you didn't vote for this guy, but you can buy his comic.
Yeah. What I don't get is, you know, in the last primaries, in the last US elections, you had that McCain who went up for the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, you know, why would you want to vote somebody in office when they're sharing a name with an oven chip?
Okay, I think I don't want to answer that question. Okay,
that's it for the news.
That's it for the news. Okay, Ian, you got any news, or is that plenty?
That was it, really. I think my British news rounded out right nicely.
Okay, now we're gonna do previews. Although you've mentioned some preview stuff out of the previews itself, Gianluca. Any other things you want to mention as what's coming out that we should be looking for?
Sure. September 7th is, but I guess it's going to be around by the time you listen to this. And it's a pretty big week for comics. Obviously, DC has a bunch of issue number ones. They'll have Action Number One, Batgirl, Detective Comics, Justice League International, Green Arrow, Swamp Thing, Stormwatch, OMAC, that Dan Didio, Keith Giffen book. Men of War and Hawk of Dove, and maybe I missed a few.
Frankenstein Agent of Shade comes out not this week. I think it comes out on the 14th.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
But I'm looking forward to that one. Franken.
For non-DCers though, there's some other good books out. If you're into prose, there is Conspiracy of the Planet of the Apes by Arkea. Mm-hmm. And what that is that it's a really good book. It's written by Andrew Gaska, and you have guest artists throughout the book doing illustrations, you know, of what's going on in the story. The cover's by Jim Steranko, so it's pretty cool. Mark Texera does a piece in there. There's character profile pics. They're all done by Matt Bush, who does a lot of the Star Wars stuff for Dark Horse. It's a really good book. I highly, if you love Planet of the Apes, definitely pick it up. Again, it's not a comic book. It is a straight story. I think Red Tide's going to be even cooler, but until Red Tide, you know, check it out. It does have Steranko on the front, though, so.
That is appealing.
Getting.
Yeah, very, very quickly, back onto Planet of the Apes a minute. You were mentioning that Boom's doing a spin-off.
Yes.
Again now.
It's called, just a sec. It is called Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes. The Arkea's Conspiracy. This is Betrayal.
So is Betrayal going to be a miniseries spin-off or
It's a 4-issue miniseries, and it's written by Gabriel Hardman and Karina Sarabeco, and drawn by Gabriel Hardman.
When's that come out?
It's coming out in November. It's for November books.
Right.
Okay. And then you have 3 incentive covers, 1 in 1 in 20 of a Dr. Zaius photo cover, 1 in 25 cover, and another 1 in 25 cover.
You know, while we're on the Planet of the Apes, I wanted to say one thing too. I think they did a smart thing, Boom did, by putting out issue number 5 is $1 this week.
Yes.
Because I think what that did with all these people going to get stuff, you look around and you find a book for $1, you pick that up pretty quickly. I saw a lot of people taking that for $1 where I think that, you know, I didn't think that was going to happen, but as I watched people pick up Justice League, it wasn't that far for Planet of the Apes and they picked that up too for $1. So I think that was a smart move on their part.
Also wanted to mention, I forgot to mention in the previous book, but previous week for Sci-Fi Pulse, but The Rents came out, and that was also a $1 book.
Yes.
And that was good, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I messed up. I didn't mention it, so I'll mention it now.
Okay.
Crucify him!
But I want to mention those, and at the same time, they released the $5 Planet of the Apes book. It's a new story arc. Issues 1 through 4 also came out in a trade that same week for like $9.
Right.
So
smart move. Yeah. I think that's a smart thing. I think publishers who realize that the DC train's gone by and actually sort of jump onto it as it goes by are going to do better. You know, that's why I was kind of puzzled at Marvel. But I think IDW, that was a smart move to do that. Now, you know, one other thing I wanted to ask you real quick is that, you know, you talked about a weekly comic. I thought IDW did a weekly comic last year about a guy who was going to die and he had to do things before he died. And I think it came out 5 weeks in a row.
That may have been another experiment that they did. I didn't really follow them, I guess, that closely when it happened.
Well, it must have worked because they're doing
it. I heard about it. But yeah, I know when they have like a 5-week month, they want to do something like this. So it'll be interesting to see how that is.
Okay. You got some more?
I wanted to mention just a few other titles that are out September 7th. You have Walter Koenig, the guy who played the original Chekhov in Star Trek. He has a book through Blue Water called Things to Come. Issue 1 debuts September 7th.
Mm-hmm.
You have the first-time paperback edition of Potter's Field by Mark Waid.
Oh.
That's published through Boom Studios.
Mm-hmm.
And then also a new Atomic Robo comic miniseries launching with Atomic Robo and the Ghost of Station X.
I love that book. Those guys do a fun book. If you like a fun, adventurous book, Atomic Robo is one to get. So I have to chime in on that one. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You interviewed him a way back in your way.
Yeah, it was on the SFP Now podcast not long ago. So if you want to go back and listen to the creators, they're fun. They actually take a view of this that I think is pretty good. They want to make comics back the way they used to be. You know, adventure, daring do, and actually teach a little science along the way, which Justice League always used to do to me. So I kind of like that book. It's such a great book. Anything else there, Gianluca?
No, that's it.
Okay, how about you, Ian?
No, I'm all out.
So anyway, what we've got now is what we're going to try and do, I think, over the next several weeks is I'm going to try to review the individual books that come out, and we'll try to talk a little bit more about them. I'll bring it up so that you can chime in there, Gianluca and Ian, too, because I think there's a lot to be said. I think we might each week try to pick out one that we think is the best of the week from DC and the worst of the week from DC. Which one do we think will not survive? Because I think it's likely when you make 52 of them, not everybody's going to survive. As much as I'd like for them all to go and all be big hits, I doubt that's going to happen. But anyway, that concludes this week's news and previews. Thanks, you guys.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. And now, another exciting episode.
I think I'd be remiss if I didn't review the latest DC comics, the first of the new 52 and the last of the old comics. Flashpoint number 505 was quite a good book. It really did hit on all the cylinders, I thought. There was lots of action as well as a great Batman moment towards the end. Some people I've heard are complaining about the fact that Batman actually reveals a little emotion to Barry Allen. But considering they're both talking about their parents and when he gets a letter from his father from an alternate timeline, I can't blame Bruce for actually breaking down in front of Barry, who I'm sure he knew was going to understand what was going on. Flashpoint was great fun. Lots of good things going on. It does wrap up that wonderful storyline. You do see Thomas Wayne get rid of Zoom for the final time, I hope. But what a great story that was. I really enjoyed it. But the highlight of the week has to be Justice League number 1. Justice League number 1, of course, written by Geoff Johns and drawn by Jim Lee, just really cleaned everybody's clock as far as sales goes. It's ordered over 200,000, as we heard Gianluca say. They're already into a third printing, so DC's new 52 is off to a good start. Some folks have been concerned that we don't see the entire Justice League in the first book, but you know, that's the way that books go these days. Comics have to build up towards something, and we're clearly heading towards a trade paperback, or a hardcover if we're really lucky. But the first issue of Justice League is a real winner. If you haven't picked it up, please do. I really think you're going to be missing something if you don't have it. Another thing that I noticed that happened, there were a lot of new people coming in the bookstore, and the one that I frequent the most, somebody came in and said, look, I've never been here before. And, you know, that's music to a bookstore owner's ears, so that's pretty good. I hear it, a lot of places did it. Not everybody had new people, but, you know, that's off to a great start. The question's going to be, how will it go from here on out? But I think that the new 52 is off to a great start. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Wayne's Comics. I've got some great interviews coming up in the next few weeks. I've got an interview with Jeff Kahn, one of the creative forces behind Red Spike from Image Comics, and also a conversation with Joe Harris, who's brought us Spontaneous and Ghost Project from Oni Press. And you're going to be interested in hearing both of those. But until next week, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.